The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, we welcome you back to hour number two of a very busy and spirited Wednesday edition of Get Up, live as always from the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. Look at this collection of handsome we've put together for you this morning. Graziano, Canty, the big fellow Amari Stoudemire, and plenty more. And let's roll it for hour number two, because we're getting up with the Steph Stopper. Could it be this simple? Does Boston have the smarts to silence the superstar in the NBA Finals? We will start there. Speaking of silent superstars, KD is not one of them. Wait till you hear what he's got to say about his former team being back and better than ever in the NBA Finals. Plus, why one big decision could shift the balance of power in the entire NFC. All that and a whole lot more as we get up with you, starting right now, as we are standing about 36 hours away from tip-off at what could be an epic NBA Finals. The Warriors, currently the odds-on favorites to beat the Celtics, according to Caesars. However, the series favorite has gone on to win just three of the last six NBA Finals, so you never know. Steph Curry, meanwhile, is the betting favorite to win his first Finals MVP. He's even money. Jason Tatum is plus 180. No other player has odds shorter than 10-1. The Vegas likes the superstars. Curry, meanwhile, will see a lot of Marcus Smart, the Defensive Player of the Year, who has been very effective as the primary defender on Steph throughout his career. So yesterday we had Big Perk here on the show. He had this to say about Smart on Steph.
You know what? I see it going Marcus Smart way, Greeny. I think Marcus Smart is going to be the biggest X factor in this series for the simple fact that in the Steve Kerr era, he has been the most effective person as far as guarding Steph Curry. Look, we all know that Steph loved to chew on that mouthpiece and let it hang off the side of his mouth. He's going to have to put that bad boy in.
I really like that way of looking at it. We got Amari here and Vince Carter with us this morning as well, getting up, fellas, and so always appreciated, VC. And let me start with you there, because, you know, it sounds to me almost too simple, but is it as simple as saying, if Marcus Smart can shut down Steph, I mean, you look at the numbers up there. Marcus Smart has been incredibly effective on Steph. If he does that, the Celtics win. Is it as simple as that?
It's not that simple, but you must have defensive discipline, Greeny and Amari. And when you're guarding him, you cannot not lose focus. You have to stay in the moment, because the beautiful thing about Steph Curry is his ability to shoot the ball, yes, but also his ability to create plays for other people with his movement, not just his passing and his ability to break down guys and get into the paint. So, you know, we must not forget the Golden State Warriors has been in this situation where they've seen the physical defense and everything. And these guys have won championships and understand that they're going to have to make adjustments in game with from quarter to quarter, half to half, game to game. So I look for Marcus Smart to try to impose his will and his dominance defensively early. But after that, look for adjustments to either free Steph Curry or get open shots for someone else.
So, look, this is a matchup of defense. The Celtics are the number one defense in the sport this year, and the Warriors number two. So those are the strengths here. But I'm thinking about this playoff run that this Celtics defense has gone on. All the different bodies they threw at KD. You were on the bench in that series. All the different bodies they threw at Giannis. Finally, I think, wore him down in Game 7. They threw a lot of bodies at Jimmy Butler, and he still managed to score 82 points in the last two games. Yeah. But one way or another, this is a different challenge, right? Steph is a very different challenge than all those wings that the Celtics have been defending throughout this postseason.
Absolutely. And thinking about the Warriors lead the league or the postseason right now in scoring off of cuts. And also ball screens, off-ball screens, right? So the actions, the multiple actions these guys are going to be doing is going to be, it's nonstop for the entire game. You understand what I'm saying? So if you're able to somewhat try to control that, it's going to be difficult for one man to do this, right? It has to be a team effort by the Warriors, by the Boston Celtics. And if they're able to somewhat control Steph Curry as much as they can by limiting space for him to attack and not allowing him to have the space to shoot the three-point shot, then it would be easier for Boston to maintain a defensive integrity. But if not, it's going to be a long night.
Well, let's give the fans stuff to watch for, right? Everyone's getting set to sit down and watch game one tomorrow night. It'll be on ABC. And so when you say they're number one in the league off cuts and screens, essentially what you're saying is, unlike a lot of other teams, they don't play ISO ball. They are cutting and they're moving and they're passing and the ball is moving.
They play a different game than everybody else.
What's that, Vince? How does that change? Well, VC, I'll start with you. How does that change the defense, right? No. It's one thing to be guarding one guy. It's another thing to be guarding five at once. How does that change what the defense is doing?
You just said it right there. It's a different game than what they've guarded. They, meaning the Boston Celtics, has guarded prior. And that's just a lot of movement. And Steph Curry understands there's going to be a lot of focus with me. That's why his ball movement, his movement without the ball is so crucial, because it opens up shots for some of their other great shooters. Or now they can play off the ball. Let's go back to when the closeout game when Klay Thompson was playing out of his mind. Steph Curry didn't have a great game. And that's the wonderful thing about the Golden State Warriors in Steph Curry, is his willingness to allow other guys to do what they have to do to win, because, hey, maybe it's not my night, or maybe I'm going to continue to draw two double teams and the physicality so other guys can go. And, of course, when they're not scoring, Steph Curry and Coach Steve Kerr are going to figure out ways to obviously get them open, because I can tell you what, his three-point shots are demoralizing. So that's why we're talking about this right now, because I've been in situations where I play great defense, and he's tapped me on the back running down as I watch the ball go in. It happens.
I want to put the graphic up there with the odds for MVP. I mentioned that Steph is the favorite, and you can see he's the overwhelming favorite there. And then Caesars likes Jason Tatum, and then there's a significant drop-off there. So Jaylen Brown is next. That's 10-1. Klay Thompson is 15-1.
Yeah, Marcus Smart down there. Andrew Wiggins, man.
Andrew Wiggins. Our guy Jay Will is picking Wiggins to be the MVP. He gets 35-1. At Caesars on that. That's a pretty interesting little pick. But let's talk about what is at stake for Steph here. So much is going to be made going into tomorrow night of the fact that while he has three rings, he has never been the MVP of a finals. KD won it twice. Andre Iguodala won it the first time. What do you think is at stake for Steph as far as that's concerned?
Well, we have to be in mind that what we're watching right now is greatness, right? So we have to live in the moment of watching Steph Curry and watch him perform, because what he's doing, he's a generational talent. Right, so we have to pay homage to that. We have to understand, like, this is something that we got to somewhat be proud about, being in this era, in this moment right now, watching a great player. And he's already solidified, right? He's already one of the all-time greats. To me, he's one of the best point guards of all time. He's the greatest shooter that we've ever seen, whether it's mid-range or three-point shot. You understand what I'm saying? So he's already there. And with him winning another championship is going to put him even on a higher, you know, level with the greats. But winning the finals MVP, I don't think that does make a big difference in his you know, career so far. Mm-hmm. But winning a championship supersedes anything that he's going to accomplish.
Look, four championships is a pretty big number. You're now amongst the all-time greats. You're getting into very rarefied air, and you're separating yourself from people and all the rest of that. How about it, VC? I mean, he is one of the generational players of his time. What's at stake for him here?
And two things I want to add to what Amari said. He's also a great finisher. Some of the little guys in league history, finishers, he's one of the best to do that as well. And he's so unselfish. And I think right now, like, I agree, he's solidified. Winning a championship, and if he wins an MVP, that just opens up another door that probably we didn't know that was there. He becomes, you know, in a conversation with the other elite. But I think he's solidified it. And what Steph is doing is just... It's empowering for the young generation. But you could be a superstar, but you could be an unselfish superstar. Because, yes, I think 2015, he probably should have won MVP. Yes, shout out to Iguodala, because he played great. But everybody thought, oh, Steph's going to win this one. And we're like, oh. And then he was willing to take a step back for KD to do what he needed to do to win, so they can win championships. It wasn't about the hardware more so than the championships that we're now talking about.
Yep.
It is in its own way an extremely diverse legacy that he has when you consider the unselfishness, being willing to absorb KD, being willing to let him be the MVP. I've always thought that LeBron should have been the MVP of that series anyway, despite the fact that they lost in six games. But that's a whole other discussion for another day. All right, guys, stay close by. Much more on these finals as we go. Game one is tomorrow night. That'll be June 2nd. Today is June 1st. So we're going to take a look at our NFL calendar and say, by the end of June, what sorts of things will be going on? Tim Hasselbeck, I'll start with you. By the end of June, will we be really worried that Lamar Jackson's not going to show up at training camp?
Greeny, I don't think we will. I think Lamar has made it clear that you know, he's going to be happy to be a Raven. I think that the team has made it clear that they, you know, want Lamar Jackson as their quarterback of the future. And I think that doesn't mean that there'll necessarily be a long-term deal in place. But I think it means that ultimately he'll be in training camp and preparing for a good 2022 season.
Another one we keep our eye on, Canty. By the end of June, will Baker Mayfield still be a Cleveland Brown?
No, the Cleveland Browns are going to move Baker Mayfield. And there's a little bit of shot clock on this thing because of Jimmy Garoppolo. He's expected to be throwing in about a month. And so as he becomes a more viable option for other teams out there that are quarterback needy, the Cleveland Browns might lose a potential place that they can move Baker Mayfield to and get compensation from.
And then Dan Graziano, let me come to you. By the end of June, will Aaron Donald be retired?
I think no. I think he'll still be on the Rams. I said yesterday I would not dismiss the retirement talk as a hollow threat. I believe him when he says he could hang it up and be content. But I also believe him when he says he thinks it'll get resolved. And I think the Rams will find a way to make him happy with the contract and bring him back for 2022.
The things that he said did make sense. If you heard him on the I Am Athlete podcast, could he be a person who was just trying to posture to get more money? Of course he could. And that is a standard operating procedure in sports and beyond sports. But the things he said made sense. He said he always wanted to play 8 years. He's played 8 years. Mm-hmm. He said winning the championship makes it more likely, not less, that he'd retire because it's not something he has to chase anymore. He's made all the money in the world. His place as one of the all-time greats is secure. So I feel like it's a legitimate question to ask Chris Canty, if he does choose to retire, what does that mean for the Rams and the top of the NFC?
Greeny, I don't think the Rams are a true championship contender without Aaron Donald, and I'll take it a step further. I'm not sure the Rams win their division without Aaron Donald. Think about the losses that they had to deal with this offseason. Odell Beckham Jr., he was huge in that Super Bowl, losing left tackle Andrew Whitworth, losing Von Miller in free agency. Those are big losses to overcome. A big part of the identity of this team was being able to dominate at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Without Aaron Donald, and then couple that with the loss of Von Miller, that puts that into question, not to mention the potential leadership vacuum that Aaron Donald's absence creates now that you've lost all those other veterans as well.
You know, Tim Hasselbeck on the radio yesterday, I was sort of musing that the impact I would see that having would be similar to, and in fact, maybe the only player in the league who isn't a quarterback, I would say that about. It would be the most significant non-quarterback team loss that I can think of in the entire NFL. What would it mean for the Rams?
Well, yeah, you know what, Greeny, as you're saying that, I'm trying to think if there's another one. Nobody's coming to mind. Look, the best thing you can say about a quarterback is he makes the guys around him better. You know, I think it's fair to say, you know, about Aaron Donald is he makes the guys around him better. I see it exactly the way Chris sees it from the standpoint of he's so disruptive that I think the guys around him play better. You know, the secondary is more effective because you know, that they know the clock is different for quarterbacks. You know, the guys that aren't getting the attention that he's getting have the ability to have one-on-ones or better matchups. And so, yeah, I don't think that they can win a Super Bowl without Aaron Donald, you know, in their lineup, you know, from a leadership and production standpoint.
Put a ribbon on it, Graz. I like the way you said it in our call this morning about the impact it would have. You said something to the effect of they wouldn't have won it without him the first time.
Well, they barely won it with him, right? Like, I mean, like the margins are so thin in this league. Like, if the 49ers safety, Tart, catches an interception that was basically a pop-up, Rams don't even go to the Super Bowl this year. So you need that guy who can make that difference-making play at the end of the game. It's hard enough to repeat as it is. I agree with you 100%. As far as non-quarterbacks go, he's as valuable as anybody. He's probably more valuable than some of the quarterbacks.
Yeah, look, he made the play ultimately that won that game. He made the two plays that won the Super Bowl. We'll see if he is done making plays in the NFL. None of us expect him to retire, but it did not sound like just an idle threat. Meanwhile, the 49ers, as you just mentioned, they were a quarter away from being in the Super Bowl. Are they about to make a huge mistake? We'll discuss that in just a moment. Plus, back to basketball we go. 6 finals in 8 years for Steph and company. If they win another, does that make them one of the great dynasties in the history of the sport? We're talking about it as we get up with you on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We are back, and it's time for QB Quick Reads with Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, can Russell Wilson lead Denver to the playoffs this year?
Yeah, he most certainly can. And, you know, the unfortunate thing for Russell Wilson is that so can every other quarterback that's in that division. I really think, as much as we're going to focus on these quarterbacks in that division because they're fun to watch, it's about the supporting cast on these football teams. You know, at what level do they play? The defensive side of the ball around these quarterbacks, that to me is going to be the difference in that division.
Next stop will be Miami. Will Tua and the Dolphins make the playoffs in the loaded AFC this year?
You know, I don't think that they're necessarily a playoff team, but I do think that Tua has far and away the best year of his career. I think there's finally, a system in place around him to help him succeed. There's certainly talent around him to help him succeed. And in fairness to Tua, he was coming off an injury, dealt with the COVID offseason, and then had to operate with clear dysfunction around him in Miami. I think he can still be the long-term answer for them without taking them to the playoffs this upcoming year.
And then one more stop, and that's San Francisco, where the 49ers lost last year in the NFC Championship game. Can Trey Lance take them further than Jimmy G did?
Not this upcoming season. I think in fairness to Jimmy G, he's had a lot of success in the NFL. His biggest issue is the inability to stay healthy, and that, I think, has affected his play. People need to realize this about Trey Lance. He started 3 games since 2019. I cannot tell you how hard it is for a quarterback to improve and get better when you're not playing. Like, you still need the reps, especially as a young player. And by the way, when he did play more, 16 games in 2019, it was against kind of an inferior level of competition that he faced in college.
Look, and so the very specific question up there is almost unfair to Trey Lance. Can you take him further? Well, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo took them, to the Final Four of the entire sport. But that is the reality, which is why I do find the whole situation a little curious, Graziano. And I'm going to blame you for it because you're the only person here I can think of that I can do so. Blaming him is a little more dangerous.
Bigger than I am.
Here's the thing. They don't have to trade Jimmy Garoppolo.
No.
They can have the guy, however unspectacular many of us believe Jimmy Garoppolo is. When he plays, they win. It's sort of an if-then proposition. There's no rule that says they have to trade him. So why does it seem so certain that they're going to?
They traded 3 first-round picks to get Trey Lance last year, and the rookie contracts are 4 years plus an option. If you don't start him this year, you have very little time before you have to make a long-term decision on him. So the plan all along was this. Kyle Shanahan said, before they drafted this quarterback, when Jimmy Garoppolo has played, we've been successful. The problem is he's been injured too much. And there's no question. The reason this happened is because the Buffalo Bills beat the 49ers very badly in December of 2020. And Kyle Shanahan watched Josh Allen, watched tape before the game, watched the game, came out of that saying, I need someone like that, who has that level of athleticism, who can do things that go well beyond Jimmy Garoppolo's skill set, so I can elevate my offense beyond where it's ever been before. He believes Trey Lance is that guy, and assuming they can get him ready to start, which they think they can, they think now's the time to show it.
Okay, fair enough. But Chris Canty, it does bring up the possibility. Developing a young quarterback and winning big are very difficult to do at the same time. This has proved to be a winning right this minute roster. Does it make sense to be developing a quarterback while you're doing that?
Well, yeah, because of the skill set that Trey Lance brings to the table. He's going to allow Kyle Shanahan to lean into the identity that they've been able to forge over the years and under his dad, and how he learned how to have success in the National Football League. Trey Lance is a far superior athlete to Jimmy Garoppolo. Trey Lance is a superior thrower of a football to Jimmy Garoppolo. And here's the reality on how the San Francisco 49ers play. They were 29th in pass attempts last year. Jimmy Garoppolo was 24th in intended air yards. So it ain't like they're heaping a whole lot of pressure on the quarterback in order to win football games. They're going to do it with their offensive line, with their run game, and with their defense. And Trey Lance allows them to lean into that identity. And Trey Lance being a part of that running game, being a focal point of that running game, is going to create a whole other dynamic that people in the National Football League and teams in the NFC aren't accustomed to seeing. I'm scared to see what Kyle Shanahan's offense looks with a runner like Trey Lance.
Look, maybe it works. Look, he wants a Josh Allen. Get in line. Everybody wants
a Josh. Yeah, no kidding.
Right. Not that easy to find. Tim, I'll give you the final word here. Quick 30 seconds. Does it make sense to you? Does the way they're doing it make sense?
Since he left high school, he started 21 games. So he leaves high school in 2017. He's played in 21 games. Think back to like the Bill Parcells model of like, you know, what you want out of a quarterback. You want a guy that started, you know, over 40 games in college. Like, I can't just kind of impress enough in terms of how little he's played, and when he has played, the level of competition he was playing. So like the expectation that year one for him is going to be, you know, so good when, and then I'll take it a step further. He was a better runner in college than a passer. So I have a lot of concerns about where this goes. And I think it's going to take a tremendous coaching effort by Kyle Shanahan.
This is going to be one of the most interesting storylines of the NFL season, assuming what we all expect to happen happens and that Jimmy Garoppolo is traded before training camp. All right, as we continue, 6 finals in 8 years. If Steph and company win another, where does this group rank among the all-time great dynasties, and how will it impact his legacy? We're talking about it. Plus, did you hear what Draymond had to say about why Steph hasn't been a finals MVP? Kevin Durant definitely heard it. He's talking about it, and so will we next. Get up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
50-50, honoring 50 years of Title IX and the women moving the world forward.
Yeah, ESPN kicks off 50-50 month today. It is honoring 50 years of Title IX and the women moving the world forward. And tonight on ESPN2, you'll be able to see a series of 5 short films focused on the fight for women's equality across the sports and cultural landscape. One of those films is called The Rule of Sedona Prince. It presents an intimate, unvarnished portrait of rising basketball and viral media star Sedona Prince, who found fame beyond the court for using their social media platform to expose gender inequalities during last year's NCAA tournament.
It's been hard having to accept that, I don't know, the world sees me as a very different person than who I am. But I portray myself as, like, me, and I should be very honest and, like, just open. People only see, like, 30-second, 60-second clips. It's been a massive accumulation of all these things just weighing on top of me.
You can tune in tonight to see The Rule of Sedona Prince and all the 50-50 shorts beginning 9:30 Eastern on ESPN. All right, to the NBA, where the Warriors breezed to a gentleman's sweep over Dallas in the Western Conference Finals behind a 24-7-7 series from Steph Curry, who was named the MVP, winning the Magic Johnson Trophy. He's a 2-time league MVP, 2-time scoring champion. There's, of course, one item missing from his resume, the elusive finals MVP, and we'll see if he is able to put that on his resume over the course of the next 2 weeks. We've got Amari Stoudemire and Vince Carter here. And, you know, VC, you played, among other teams, on the San Antonio Spurs, who we look at as a dynasty in NBA history. And I've had some debate on NBA Countdown and other places over whether or not that word applies to these Warriors. So when you look at the Splash Brothers and Draymond and Steve Kerr, that core group that's been together,
At this moment in time, would you consider them a dynasty?
I do. I think they're very relevant each and every year. And it's like when you watch the finals and you don't see them there, you don't see Steph Curry, Klay, and Draymond, it just seems different. And you don't see LeBron there, it just seems different. I'm just curious to wonder, Greeny, why people feel like it's not. And and just for my knowledge, because I think this is a team six appearances in 8 years. Like, what is it then? What do you call that? You know, just like I think we discredit sometimes LeBron's 10 appearances. That's amazing to me. So, you look at this graphic here of guys, like when you didn't see these guys in the finals, it didn't seem right. And I think we constantly see them time and time again. So they deserve to be in that dynasty conversation, in my opinion.
Yes, and the group that you're seeing up here, Russell's teams won almost all of those. Jerry West's teams did not, but Michael certainly did. Those Lakers teams won a bunch of championships. This turned into sort of an everybody yelling at each other situation last Friday night on NBA Countdown with Stephen A. and Wilbon and Jalen. The question, I guess, to you, Amari, is do they have to win this to be a dynasty? Four championships in an eight-year span. Do they have to win this to put themselves in that kind of company?
They do. They have to win one. They have to win this one to become a dynasty team. From my understanding, dynasty team are the teams that win three championships in a row. That becomes a dynasty, right? So I think the terminology of dynasty has been somewhat shifted a bit, because now you have teams that have been to the finals. With the Warriors, for example, they've been to the finals six times. They won but they haven't won three in a row, which is a difficult thing. So what's the definition of dynasty? Does that mean three in a row championships or going to the finals multiple times? That's the question I got to ask.
Well, so those Bulls teams you saw on your screen won multiple three-peats. They won back-to-back three-peats, if you will.
Right.
The Shaq and Kobe Lakers actually won three consecutive championships.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
They're the last team to do it, but they did not make it 6 years in an eight-year span, so that's why you don't see them on that screen. See, that's why this becomes an everybody yelling at each other situation, because dynasty is something, Vince, that everyone defines a little differently, and we can define it however we choose to define it. To me, they are clearly the preeminent team of this era. And getting back there without Durant, the fact that Durant goes, and here they are, back again, and to use my phrase, back and better than ever. And, oh, by the way, this window is not closing. They figure to be certainly a contender in this for years to come. It feels to me like if they're not a dynasty right now, VC, I have a tough time figuring out who is.
Exactly. That would be my next thing is I have a tough time figuring out who is. I mean, because of all the young talent, yes, you say Steph, Klay, and Draymond and Iggy are older, but you can now add older guys with some young talent in Poole, Kuminga, Wiggins, Moody, Payton, and then you can even say Toscano Anderson and Damian Lee, other guys. So they have a nucleus of guys who will have finals experience as they move forward and playoff experience. Not just guys just participating. We're talking about Poole, Kuminga, Wiggins, and Moody, and Payton, when he gets back, will have finals experience, hopefully winning one, to add to what they already have in their superstar tandem or trio. If you add Iggy, they have enough to continue to move on to do this again.
I will say to you, Amari, what I said to Stephen A. and Wilbon the other night. I'm glad I never took a class in which you were the teacher, because you're a tough grader. You're a tough grader. If you've got to win three in a row to be considered a dynasty in your book, then we're talking about the just a tiny little sliver. Those Magic Johnson teams never won three in a row. The Larry Bird Celtics teams, who didn't appear on that graphic there, never won three in a row. That is a very, very tough mark that you're asking people to make.
Well, here's the thing. When I was growing up, when the Bulls was winning three in a row, they were considered a dynasty team.
Yeah.
When the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe won three in a row, that was considered to be a dynasty team.
Right.
Now, due to the circumstances now in this era, okay, the Warriors are, the top team right now, right? But LeBron James himself is a dynasty. Right?
Yes.
Everywhere he goes, he wins championships. The guy has four championships. You know what I'm saying? So in this era, LeBron James himself is a dynasty.
He made eight finals appearances in eight seasons consecutively. Jalen actually tried to make that argument on TV that LeBron is his own dynasty.
Yep.
And Stephen A. yelled at him so loudly that he drowned out the 20,000 people in the arena. So that's pretty much what my life has been like lately. All right, speaking of yelling at each other, let's get to the next order of business here. So Draymond Green was on Colin Cowherd's podcast, I believe this was, and was weighing in on why Steph Curry has never won that finals MVP we talked about a moment ago. And here's what he said.
Kevin Durant was absolutely incredible in those finals runs. As you know, right. You watched it. We all watched it. Kevin Durant was absolutely insane. Steph Curry got double teamed probably seven times the amount that KD did in a given series.
Okay, so he says that. And then immediately that gets to KD, and he's got to chime in by saying, from my view of it, this is 100% false. So Draymond then comes back and says, you have to learn to listen to full takes and not snippets before you get baited into tweeting, champ. And KD sent a reply saying, oh, I've seen it. You see what he says up there. I love the show, which is the incredibly passive-aggressive way of saying I'm not paying any attention whatsoever to you trying to make nice with me here. And I will remind anyone who needs to be reminded that these two had major issues when they were together. Remember when they were in the huddle and they had to be separated and all the rest of that. So that's the history. I don't know what the relationship is between the two of them at this point.
But Green, it's the reason why.
Go. The reason why what?
The reason why that argument happened, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, getting KD to understand to play the Golden State way. And you can still be the one-on-one dominant ISO player at times, but you have to buy in to what we're trying to do, and that's win championship. It's not the I in team, the individual. It's the team concept and aspect. And I think once he bought into that, that's when they took off, and that's when Steph Curry said, I can take a back seat to Kevin Durant to make him feel comfortable. And when we need a bucket, we can put this guy is the best one-on-one player we've seen. Pure jump shot, can't guard 6'10", 6'11", 7-foot shooter. Because he's not like to be called 7 feet, so I call him 6'10". But he's a guy you can put the ball in and get you a bucket. But when they're moving, Clay, Steph moving, and you have Kevin Durant trailing sometimes, like, If he were to buy into it, they would have this championship and he would win an MVP. And that's where it comes into me saying Steph is an unselfish elite superstar because of that right there.
I think that's right. And so, Amari, look, what it comes down to is this. I will remind everyone, Kevin Durant, this is by no means the first time that he's gotten involved in a war of words on social media. And I've lost count of how many people he has responded to in this conversation. It's not just him and Draymond, but he's writing back and forth with all sorts of people on Twitter. So maybe that takes a little bit of the starch away from suggesting what some people are doing, which is the fact that he's getting himself involved in this makes some people think he's feeling some kind of way about the Warriors being where they are without him and him being now, I believe, 37 days removed from being swept in the first round. Yeah. You think he's feeling some kind of way?
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, he's seeing right now that, you know, his former team's in the finals, right? We all know that hurts a little bit. When you leave a team and they end up going to the finals, you're like, oh, man, I don't want to see these guys in the finals. You know, I was just playing with them. So he does somewhat feel some kind of way, but he also is confident with his ability, knowing that if guys are healthy next season, that he can have a chance to be where they are now this year, which is in the finals. So he does feel a little bit of discomfort seeing his former team in the finals, but he also has, like, the extreme confidence in himself and his teammates that he can be there next year.
Well, look, Stephen A. says all the time with us, Vincent, and I'll throw it to you, that Kevin Durant choosing Kyrie Irving over Steph Curry, which is not the only piece of this, but it is the most prominent. It's the easiest one to define in his decision to leave Golden State, that will wind up proving to have been an enormous mistake. The question is on the screen, should he regret it? Go.
Yeah, but for KD, I think he won his championships, which, you know, we as the media, and I include myself in this now, when you step into this game and consider the greatest, they always look at, okay, whatever, but does he have any championships? Well, he got that. Now he wants to go do it himself, and that is his guy. That's his boy. So I guess he felt like, I'm ready to move on from this to go somewhere else and try to do it myself. But, yeah, oh, my boy wants me to play with me. So it's just an interesting dynamic. Mm-hmm. Does he regret it? I don't know. I think we feel like he regrets it. But you know, until he says otherwise, what can we say?
Look, it's worth pointing out that this is an evolving narrative. The story here has not been written. To Amari's point, if a year from now we're talking about the Nets with KD and Kyrie in the finals, then that changes the dynamic of everything, which is why it's our job to sit here and speculate about all of these things. That's why I've never fully understood why he inserts himself into these debates all of the time because he knows he could win this thing next year, right? I mean, they could be a final, quick final thought on this. The Nets could easily be sitting, he certainly hopes they're sitting in this situation a year from today.
100%. And Kevin likes
playing
to
Golden State.
He likes to get involved in these type of conversations. You know, it keeps him engaged. He's a student of the game of basketball. So anytime a conversation about basketball comes up and his name's involved, he wants to chime in because he's a student of the game. So he loves basketball so much. Basketball is Kevin's life, right? Mm-hmm. This guy trains at the highest level. When he's in the gym by himself, he's going 100%. You know, so he's focusing on the game at the highest peak. And so anytime a conversation happens with him and his name concerning basketball, he's going to chime in.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, look, he perceives a lot of slights out there, even when I think he should be completely above them. And no one doesn't think he's one of the greatest players that ever lived. Anyway, we'll see what happens. And tomorrow night on the floor, the Warriors get a chance to start settling it. We'll have all the action for you of the finals on ABC. It's also on ESPN Radio. We got Tatum. We got Steph. We got the Celtics and Warriors. We'll start your night tomorrow night on ABC with NBA Countdown, 8:30 Eastern from San Francisco. So that's the finals in the NBA. As far as the Western Conference Finals of the NHL, they got underway last night between a couple of number one overall picks, Connor McDavid in Edmonton, Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado. Pick it up first period, we're tied at one. Check out the goal of the night. This is Devon Taves with the pass ahead to MacKinnon, who goes 5-hole and gives Colorado its first lead of the night, 2-1 the score. Now it's 5-3 Avs in the second, and the goals keep on coming. That's Cale Makar with a slap shot that goes in off JT Compher in front of the crease. It's Compher's second of the night. Avs take a 6-3 lead, and that would be all for Mike Smith. But wait, there's more. Later in the second, Avs are up 7-3, but the Oilers are not giving up. Leon Draisaitl, the hold, the pass. McDavid, the one-timer. It's a three-goal game going into the third. Now we're under 8 minutes to go. Oilers down 7-5. They're on the power play. Draisaitl, great pass. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins with the score, his fifth of the playoffs. Oilers are within one. Less than a minute left in the game now. Oilers, desperate, empty net situation. Draisaitl taking the shot. Oilers trying to poke it through. But the backup goalie, the second stringer, Pavel Francouz, coming up huge time and again. Colorado adds an empty netter at the end. They win it 8-6. They take game one of the Western Conference Final. We've got the East for you. And so tonight we'll have game one right here on ESPN and the ESPN app. Rangers against the two-time defending champion Lightning. Our coverage begins at 8 Eastern. Oh, by the way, there's a huge golf match today involving four people you know, four of the great quarterbacks in the NFL. Which one's going to wind up winning when it really matters? We'll answer that question coming up next, and we'll see if Graziano can answer this one. Here we go from Hembo. Which player has the highest career scoring average in NBA Finals history? Hembo's a very small man. It's a basketball question for Graziano. I predict he gets it right anyway. Next, get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we're back. And I want to just make sure everyone is aware of the absolute disgrace that is going on here. So yesterday, Hembo tries to trick a basketball question. He tries
to
get a basketball question against Zach Lowe.
Yeah.
Zach gets it wrong. Graziano, just sort of sitting in the back over there, yells out the right answer. And Hembo was so upset by this.
He was.
And now he's asking you a basketball question. You, an NFL insider.
But a sports fan.
But a sports fan, so let's see how we do here. Which player has the highest career scoring average in NBA Finals history?
Minimum 10 games. That's key, obviously. It's somebody who played a lot. Look, I know that this is not, I don't think this is going to be my guess, but I know that Jerry West has the most career points in NBA Finals games.
Okay.
But I feel like he played in a lot of them. I don't think Jordan's far behind. My guess is Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan's a guy.
He's second all time. The answer is Rick Barry, which is an impossible one to get right. Hembo, this is disgusting. This behavior.
Now that is, he is small.
On the part. Like,
that's not, because no one's going to guess Rick Barry.
With great respect, Rick Barry is an all-time great player, top 75. I love you, Rick Barry.
MVP of the 75 finals. I recognize
that's
all that.
That's an impossible question. And as we put the score on the board, does he get credit for
yesterday? What about yesterday?
Graziano's win from yesterday has to count.
It absolutely counts.
Okay, we have to have a post-show meeting at which everyone is going to be yelling at each other, and that's what's going to happen. In the meantime, let's do off-season overreactions with Dan Graziano. So if I were to say, Graz, Jimmy Garoppolo will be on the Niners roster when the season begins, would that be an overreaction?
Yes, I still believe he'll be traded. I think he would have been traded by now if he hadn't had shoulder surgery. He's supposedly going to be healthy enough to start throwing in about a month. At that point, the 49ers' hope is that they can re-engage some interested teams in potential trade talks. I think that's where this ends up.
All right, the next one. If I were to say Mac Jones is going to regress in his second season because of the seeming confusion on the offensive coaching staff in New England, would that be an overreaction?
I think it is an overreaction. I think too much is being made of this, right? I mean, Bill Belichick is obviously a great coach and has a plan for this, and you know, will Mac Jones miss Josh McDaniels? Potentially, but I think there's an opportunity for this staff to kind of build an offense around Mac Jones to an extent that that maybe they might not have had before. So I think it's an overreaction. I think it'll be okay.
All right, and then I got one more for you. The Cowboys, we've talked so much about the quarterback there. Let's talk about the star running back. If I were to say Tony Pollard is going to eclipse Ezekiel Elliott on the depth chart this coming year, would that be an overreaction?
I say yes, it is an overreaction. I know this is a popular opinion because of how explosive Pollard has looked, but the Cowboys still value Ezekiel Elliott as a runner, and they really value him as a pass protector. I mean, he is, if not the best, one of the best in the league at picking up the blitz and helping protect Dak Prescott, which is priority number one for the Cowboys offense. They think Elliott was playing hurt last year. He's still going to be the number one guy there in Dallas.
All right, we'll see how that winds up shaking out. In the meantime, the number one football situation in the world today takes place on a golf course. And I, for one, am looking forward to seeing it. You're aware of the match that's going on here. We got Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers teaming up and facing off against Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. That's today on the golf course for charity in the Match 6 in Las Vegas, a clash between the old guard and the new one. As far as the golf is concerned, in Vegas, Brady and Rodgers are the favorites to beat Mahomes and Allen at minus 190. Mahomes and Allen have never played in this match. It'll be Brady's third time in the format. It'll be Rodgers' second time in the format. Now, I myself could easily stand here and dissect the golf for the rest of the day because I would be delighted to do it. But let's actually take this to the football side of it. So the question is, of those four, I'm telling you one of them is winning the Super Bowl this coming year, regardless of what happens on the golf course today. Graz, who would you tell me it's going to be?
I would take Josh Allen because I think he has the best team. On paper, I think Buffalo is primed to win this year. I know they haven't been able to get past Mahomes and the Chiefs in the playoffs, but they've been this close. And I think this is his year, so I'm going to take Josh Allen of these four as the best chance. They all have a good chance.
Chris Canty, which one of these four is going to win the Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, I'm going with the Buffalo Bills. Co-sign retweet on everything Graz just said. It's the only team in the National Football League that's returning a top five offense, top 10 defense. I love the additions of their top two draft picks. James Cook, the running back out of Georgia, and then Kyrie Elam, the cornerback to play opposite of Tre'Davious White. The only question that I have about the Buffalo Bills is pass rush. They added Von Miller this offseason to punch that up. How far they go is going to be determined by not only Josh Allen and what that offense does, but what Greg Rousseau, Boogie Basham, and A.J. Epenesa bring as edge rushers.
Look, they were, 17 seconds away or whatever
it
was?
Tails or heads.
Everything couldn't have gone more wrong. All right, Hasselbeck, which of these quarterbacks is winning the Super Bowl this year?
Well, considering Brady basically wins a Super Bowl a third of the time, you know, when you look at his career and his success, I'm taking the easy answer and going Brady, that 30% chance versus the field. Here's the way I look at it as well. The NFC South is an easy division. Like, that's not the case for Mahomes. That's not the case necessarily for Josh Allen, I don't believe. And so I think that when you get Brady into the tournament and you give him a chance, I'm going to choose that over the other four guys, even though I think the other three guys are better right now, players, better quarterbacks right now. I just, once Brady's in it, it's hard to bet against him.
Yeah, the other thing I would say with regard to this is the AFC, I think, is at this point the varsity, and the JV is the NFC.
Not for playoff.
Josh Allen may have the best team, and he may at this moment, in fact, be the best quarterback of the group. But he's got a much tougher road than the NFC guys do. If you look at the top teams in the NFC, Green Bay lost their next best player in Devontae Adams. The best player on the Rams is talking about retiring. I think Brady is the guy. I mean, for all of the obvious reasons, maybe the most important of them being he's Tom freaking Brady.
Yeah.
I think I'm going with Tom Brady. Why do you look so skeptical?
No, I just want to know who you have in the golf. Like, who do you think is going to win?
I got the old guys.
You wanted to bring
Did you see Rodgers? Rodgers is a stick. About Hasselbeck, what do you think? Who wins the golf today?
It's the old guys. The old guys are playing more golf than the young guys. I mean, that's just, it's really, that's it. Plus, there's a, like, golf's a different game, too. Like, there's some, like, wisdom, patience, like, club selection, things like that. I just feel like the experience of that, and then also, like, the experience in the event.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can't undersell that for non-pro golfers.
I'm looking forward to it today. Guys, awesome as always. And the fun continues with First Take. In just a moment, they're coming up top of the hour debating what a third loss in the finals would mean for Steph's legacy. It's Molly. It's Stephen A. It's the Mad Dog, Chris Russo. Top of the hour here on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, U.S. men's soccer team in action tonight, prepping for the World Cup, playing a friendly against Morocco in Cincinnati at 7:30 Eastern tonight on ESPN2, the first of six matches they'll play before heading off to Qatar. And I'm heading off to ESPN Radio, and the fun continues here with First Take right now.